You want a story?
Yes.
You want a story, Kelly? Okay, listen. Grandma will probably read you a story, okay? I'm sure she will. But why don't you get the other kids outside, okay? Go outside and see if they want to come inside, and Grandma will read a story, okay? All right, go get them.
Right, left,
okay, kids, come on. Get in here, hurry. Hustle. We're going to get Grandma to tell us a story. Grandma!
Yes?
The kids want you to come in here and tell a story. You got time?
How about reading a story, not just telling a story?
Read a story, that sounds good.
All right. If everybody's kind of quiet, gather around, and I'll read a story.
Fantastic. Here we go.
Hi, kids. This is Grandma. We're going to read about Jesus unveiling the future. The disciples talked among themselves about the wonderful things Jesus had told them. They longed to know more about the future. If he was going to leave them, what would happen to them after he was gone? How long would he be away? When would this present world end and his world, his beautiful kingdom, begin? They found a chance to ask him. One day, while looking at the massive walls of the temple, Jesus startled them all by saying, "You see all these things? There shall not be left one stone upon another that will not be thrown down." The disciples could hardly believe their ears. The temple destroyed? How could that ever happen? Such a beautiful building, too, and costly. Who would ever want to wreck it? Perhaps Jesus meant he was going to throw it down himself when he came to set up his kingdom. Or would it be the work of enemies? They made up their mind to find out. Back on the Mount of Olives, where the little group often met, they asked him, "Tell us, when shall these things be, and what shall be the sign of thy coming and in the end of the world?" Jesus told them, drawing back the curtain that hides the future, he let them look into the years ahead. It was not a bit as they had expected. Indeed, I wouldn't be surprised if afterwards they wished they hadn't asked him. Sometimes it's better not to know the future, but to leave it in the hands of God. First, Jesus warned them to be ever on the watch for false Christs. He said that after he was gone away, one man after another would arise and say, "I am Christ," and claim to have come back just as he had promised he would do. As for the promised kingdom, that would not be set up for a long, long time. And you know what? We're still waiting for it to be set up. Maybe in our lifetime, we don't know. "You shall hear of wars and rumors of wars," he said. "Nation shall rise against nation and kingdom against kingdom. There will be famines and pestilence and earthquakes in divers places." All of these things would be but the beginning of sorrows. Far worse troubles would come to the disciples. They would be cruelly treated. Enemies would put them in prison and kill them. "You shall be hated of all nations for my name's sake," said Jesus. Because of all this suffering, many who claimed to be his followers would give up their faith and betray one another and hate one another. Wickedness would abound and love would grow cold. Some faithful ones, however, would never give up. They would endure to the end and be saved. Jesus now began to talk about Jerusalem, which at this moment lay peacefully below them. "Great trouble would come upon this city," he said, "and soon a foreign army would utterly destroy it." The disciples could save themselves from this disaster by watching for a certain sign. The moment they saw the city surrounded by soldiers, they were to flee to a place of safety. They must not delay a moment, not even to pick up a single treasure. Should they be working in a field, they must not go home to get their clothes. Instead, they must run for dear life. Should they do so, they would have just enough time to escape. Then Jesus said a strange thing. He told them to pray that they wouldn't have to flee in the winter or on the Sabbath day. On that quiet, peaceful afternoon on the Mount of Olives, it must have been hard for the disciples to imagine the scenes Jesus was talking about. Their lives in dear old Galilee had been so peaceful. They had never seen a great city besieged by armies, and the very idea of their holy city being destroyed was frightening to them. Would it really happen? Later, they told other disciples what Jesus had said, and the news spread far and wide. Many believers began to pray that their flight might not be on the Sabbath or in the winter. No doubt, some wondered how they would be able to flee if Jerusalem was surrounded by an army. It did seem strange, come to think of it, but they went on believing that Jesus couldn't have made a mistake. Of course he hadn't. Years later, Jerusalem was surrounded by Roman soldiers, recognizing the promised sign the Christians in the city prepared to flee. Then, just as they were wondering how they would get through the enemy lines, the Romans mysteriously withdrew. Every follower of Jesus who believed his warning got away. Then the Romans returned and destroyed the city. How wonderful that Jesus should have known all this so long before it happened. But there was he not, the Prince of Prophets? Back on that lonely hillside, he now began to tell his disciples about other things that would happen hundreds of years ahead, right on down to the end of time. Looking far into the future, Jesus told his disciples about a fearful time of trouble that would come upon all who loved him. Then shall be great tribulation, he said, such as was not since the beginning of the world to this time. No, nor ever shall be. No doubt he was thinking of the days of trouble the prophet Daniel wrote about. Perhaps you remember that little horn on the head of the fourth beast which wore out the saints of the Most High. Jesus knew this story well. He was the one who had sent Gabriel to tell Daniel about it. Now, as he retold it to his disciples, he was sad for his elect, his dear people, who would suffer so much. As the days of sorrow and suffering would slowly pass, more and more cheats would claim to be Christ and come back. So wary would be the people, so eager for the trouble to end, that many would be deceived. False Christs and false prophets would arise, showing great signs and wonders. But Jesus said, don't follow them. If anyone says to you, lo, here is Christ, for there he is, don't believe him. If they say, behold, he is in the desert, don't go look for him there. If they say, behold, he is in some secret room, don't believe it, he won't be there either. They were to watch for certain great happenings, each one big and important, that no deceiver could imitate it. The first would be in the heavens, which God would use as a huge advertising signs. There shall be signs in the sun and the moon and in the stars. The sun shall be darkened and the heaven shall not give her light, and the stars shall fall from heaven. The next signs would be on the earth. Upon the earth, the distress of nations with perplexity, the sea and the waves roaring, men's heart failing them for fear, and for looking after those things which are coming on the earth, and for the powers of heaven shall be shaken. Right after this, said Jesus, everybody will see the Son of Man coming in a cloud with power and great glory. Believers in Jesus should watch very carefully for these signs because they are the sure token of his second advent. When these things begin to come to pass, then look up and lift up your heads, for your redemption draweth nigh. Pointing to a fig tree not far away, he reminded his disciples how the bursting forth of nature in the springtime is looked upon by all as a sure sign of the coming of summer. So, he said, when you see all these things come to pass, know that the kingdom of God is nigh at hand. The promised signs in the heaven and on the earth, great, marvelous, and unmistakable, will herald his glorious return. It's worth thinking about. Nobody would want to be taken by surprise. How sad it would be to have Jesus come back someday and no one was ready to welcome him. Jesus knew all these things, and as a prince of prophets, he could see them and see them going far on down through the years. So he urged his disciples to be careful, lest they become so careless or too busy that they would fail to see the signs, big and plain, though they might be. He didn't want that day of day to come upon them as a snare, with the suddenness that a trap closes upon an unwary animal. Watch at all times, he said to them, and he says it to us, praying that you will have strength to escape all these things that will take place and to stand before the Son of Man. As Jesus warned his disciples to watch for his return, I can imagine they said to him, don't worry, Lord, we won't forget. We'll look for you. We'll be glad to see you again. But Jesus knew better. He knew that after many years had passed, even those who claimed to love him most would begin to wonder whether he would ever come back. Some would say, my Lord delayeth his coming, and give up the faith altogether. You see, they were looking for it back there, But all these thousands of years, and he still hasn't returned. So we don't know the day or the hour. We just have to be ready, because we are to be found watching and faithful when he returns, whether it's your generation, my generation, or a future generation. We don't know. But we are told to not to worry, but to be faithful to him, to keep believing in him, and not to go after false gods. And we are also told to occupy till he comes, to be faithful to him. And then when he comes, all will be well. Once he said that his return will be very much like the coming of the great flood in the days of Noah. As it was in the day of Noah, so will it days of the Son of Man. They ate, they drank, they married, they were given in marriage until the day when Noah entered the ark and the flood came and destroyed them all. So will it be on the day when the Son of Man is revealed. Everyday things will go on much the same, right on down to the end. Mothers will get breakfast, wash the dishes, make beds, clean the house, and so on, just as they have always done. Fathers will shave, eat, and rush off to work as usual. Boys and girls will get out of bed, throw on their clothes, eat their breakfast, and run to school, just as they do all the time. In other words, most people will be acting just about as usual until the day when Jesus appears in his glory. That's why we must be very careful to be ready for his coming all the time. Just because life seems to go along much the same from day to day, we must never let ourselves say, oh well, nothing's going to happen. The world is going to go on and on and on and on and on forever. If we do, we shall be taken by surprise. For Jesus will break in upon us suddenly when we least expect him, as a thief in the night, or as the fire fell upon Sodom and Gomorrah, or as the flood came upon the world of Noah. Maybe we should look a little more closely at those words of Jesus. As it was in the days of Noah, so will it be the days of man. How were things back then? What were the days of Noah like? If you want to know, just turn back to the first few chapters in the book of Genesis. Did you ever notice that after Cain killed Abel and fled east from Eden to the land of Nod, his son Enoch built a city? That was the first city to be ever built. It may have been a small one, but it began and marked the beginning of a trend, away from country living to city living, with all of its evils. Did you ever notice that Cain's great-great-grandson, Lamech, was the first man to take two wives? That's when polygamy began, and with all its sad results. But you know what? One of the biggest things is the earth was filled with violence. And one of the two main things that happened in those days is that men loved men and women loved women. That's called homosexuality. And in this day and age, it has become quite trendy to be a homosexual or to be a lesbian. And that goes against what God said. He said, a man shall love a woman shall love a man. He didn't say, you're going to have two mommies or two daddies. So that was one of the greatest sins there was, is to be a homosexual. And that happened. The second thing that was so bad, God saw that the wickedness of man was great in the earth, and every imagination of the thoughts of his heart were only evil continually. And it repented the Lord that he made man on the earth, and it grieved him at his heart. And the Lord said, I will destroy man whom I have created from the face of the earth. No doubt Jesus had all this in mind when he said, as it was in the days of Noah, so will it be in the days of the Son of Man. The second thing that was the same as in Noah's days was this sin of race mixing. You know, we didn't have race mixing for years and years and years, but Jesus could look down after the days of Noah to our day. And now you notice that blacks and whites and Asians and Mexicans and so on, they're all marrying in with the white race. And those are the two greatest sins, the sin of homosexuals and the sin of race mixing, because that mixes the blood. Blacks should be with blacks, Asian with Asians, whites with whites. That's the way God designed us. Those are two sins. And Jesus said, when you see those things happen, means that I'm coming back pretty soon. Okay, we'll study more tomorrow. Love you. Bye.